This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. On Tuesday night, voters in Vermont elected Republican Phil Scott as the state's next governor. Scott received just over 52% of the vote. Democrat Sue Minter got 43.5%, and Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee received just under 3% of the ballots cast. Scott says there's a clear message from Tuesday night.
My election was a mandate in terms of this crisis of affordability is real. They want some action on the economy. They want to be they don't want to have to struggle. They don't want to have to work two and three jobs to make ends meet.
What policies will Governor-elect Scott pursue to address the issue of affordability, and how will these decisions affect the state budget for next year? These are just a few of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor-elect Phil Scott. Great to have you here. Congratulations on your victory.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Now that the campaign is over, do you have some questions for Governor-elect Scott? What are your thoughts about holding the line on budget growth? And a fair number of voters supported both Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican gubernatorial candidate Phil Scott back on Tuesday night. Were you one of those voters? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net, or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Throughout your campaign, you talked about the affordability crisis in the state of Vermont. Tell me the agenda to address this crisis. What do you see as the key elements of that?
Well, certainly, I think that we have to act appropriately ourselves on the state level. And we've seen the growth of the budget over the last number of years, the tune of about $700 million. And that's unsustainable growth when you compare it to what the economic growth of the economy and as well as wages that have been fairly stagnant. I think that that's what's putting a lot of stress on Vermonters. So I think state government needs to live within its means first, finding efficiencies and doing whatever we can to help ourselves and trying to compete as well with other states, other regions, because we have a lot to offer in terms of Vermont and its product and its people and its culture. And I think it's all hands on deck. And we can prosper, and we can grow this economy, but we'll have to work together in order to do that.
You've got 2 months to put together a state budget, a budget that you'll present to the legislature probably sometime in the middle of January. What's the growth rate going to be? You talk about looking back and how much did wages go up? How much did the state economy grow? What's the likely growth rate for the state budget that you'll be unveiling in the middle of January?
We're looking at that. We're looking for a formula that works. Working with economists, my team has been doing that over the last couple of days, and we're in day three now, so it's a bit daunting. But we want to come up with something that makes sense. We want to make sure my mandate to my team has been I don't want to just look at the growth rate of wages. I want to see what the growth rate of wages are for those working Vermonters. And that makes a difference to me. We can have higher end growth for those who are fortunate enough to have good jobs and their increase in pay has been maybe substantial. But I'm more concerned about those everyday working Vermonters that are struggling to make ends meet. And I meet them every single day. And I think that that's something that I want to make sure is part of this formula that we derive. The economy is easier to pinpoint, but it's the growth that I'm worried about of wages or lack of growth.
And for our listeners to understand, you're proposing a very different way to put together a state budget. Currently, state and legislative economists make revenue projections, and then the budget is then built around those projections. And you're saying that future budget growth should be based on past economic data. That's quite a change, isn't it?
I believe it is, but I think it's more practical. It deals with reality rather than projections and optimism. And that's why it's so important to have this formula right, because this, I hope, will be used as a model as we move forward in the future. We don't have to guess at what the economy is going to grow or the wages grow. we can simply look back at what happened last year. And I think that's a much better indicator than if we are over-optimistic in terms of projections in the future. That just makes you feel good. And then when you aren't able to attain that, then there's rescissions and there's this drop in revenue. And I want to avoid that. I want to be more realistic and practical.
So when you do come up with a number, let's say it's 2 or 3%, do you anticipate putting together a budget that has sort of across the board increases of that amount? Or will you look at it and say, well, this department actually needs 6%, which means this department is going to have to be cut?
Yeah, it's all about prioritization. What we see is important. What Vermonters needs, public safety, I think, is really important of any government. Trying to deal with this opiate issue is really important. We just need to make sure that we're putting the resources in the right areas that help Vermonters the most, and then work on economic growth at the same time. But it won't be across the board, but it'll be in terms of the overall budget.
You know, you said on Tuesday night that the message of your election is that Vermonters want something done about the affordability crisis in the state. What do you think the message is of the election of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump?
Well, as you know, I wasn't a supporter of Donald Trump, but you can see the vast amount of frustration across the country. And I think that many just underestimated the power of the people that are just really, really frustrated with what they see as the polarization, the inability of the economy working for them. It's just a vast amount of anger, and I think we just saw a reaction to that.
As you mentioned, you spoke out about his candidacy. I want to say it was at least a year ago when you said that you wouldn't support him, nor would you vote for him. Do you have some concerns about him as president-elect as he's about to take office?
Well, I think we have a lot of uncertainty across the nation, but I also believe that President Obama put it well, as did Hillary Clinton, in saying that we have to accept the fact that Donald Trump is going to be our next president. We want him to succeed. We don't want him to fail, because if he fails, we all fail. So we need to give him a chance. I have a great amount of faith in our democracy. We have a great congressional delegation here in Vermont, and I believe this is bigger than one person, and we'll make it through this. And I truly believe that we'll after all the campaign rhetoric is done. That we'll see what his policies really are. And I truly hope that he proves me wrong, that I'm wrong on this issue.
You know, the president-elect is talk about limiting immigration into this country. Will you encourage the Trump administration to allow the Syrian refugee settlement program to go forward in Rutland?
As I've said with the Rutland situation, public safety has to come first. But we have a deep amount of compassion for those who are coming from war-torn countries, and we have a responsibility to help them. I'm hopeful that we have a full vetting process and that this will move forward so that we can accept those. I had the great fortune, it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, of meeting with the Bhutanese refugees that came to Vermont about 10 years ago. They're now all U.S. citizens. They are thriving. Half of them have property here in Vermont. A few of them have businesses. And I believe in legal immigration, and I believe in helping those who need our help. And so we'll work our way through it and hopefully give comfort to those in Vermont to know that we'll protect them.
Do you think that refugee program in Rutland is threatened in any way now with the election of Donald Trump?
I don't have the answer to that. I'm not sure how quickly that will come to be. I think that it could move forward, but I'm not sure. I really don't know.
You know, Planned Parenthood gets roughly 40% of its funding from the federal government, and President-elect Trump has vowed repeatedly to defund the organizations. If this happens, will you restore these lost federal funds with state dollars?
Well, I believe, regardless of them opposing me and attacking me during this last campaign, I believe in their mission, and I believe they provide quality health care to those in Vermont. And I think it's essential that we continue to do whatever we can to help them succeed, because they're part of the fabric of health care here, and I will do whatever we can to protect that.
Even if that means some additional state money?
Well, again, it's about prioritizing. So we'll do whatever we can. I don't know what is going to happen on the federal level, but we'll cross that bridge when it comes. But I just want to, I was very disappointed in Planned Parenthood coming out with dishonest ads. And I thought it was partisan in nature. And I just think it was so unfortunate for their future, actually, and the message that sends, that if you have an R beside your name, that you're not in their camp. And I've always advocated that I think they do good work. I spoke out against the government when those Republicans that were seeking to defund Planned Parenthood last year, and I will continue to do so in the future.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Mark, who's calling from Burlington. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm the president of 10th Crow Creative, a marketing agency here in Burlington. And our business is dependent in part on continuing to attract and retain young employees. Yet I find our employees continue to struggle with not only finding, but also affording quality child care. And so I was wondering, coming under this affordability umbrella that you're pushing, Governor Scott, or Governor-elect, I wonder what plans you have for what government might be able to do to help in those instances to provide more affordable and good quality child care.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point, one that we talked about a lot on the campaign trail. I believe that there's savings in government. I believe this is areas where we can modernize and make Vermont, or make government work more efficiently. And I believe we should use some of those savings in order to provide child care, early childhood development, whenever we can. I believe in pre-K. I believe in trying to give those children the right step forward in life, and I think that this is a great way to do so. You could take the PICUS report. It was an initiative asked for by the legislature, the Joint Fiscal Office, totally independent body, had this report done. The PICUS report had $150 million worth of savings in our education system. And I would advocate that if we could take a step forward with that, that we use some of the report, and we were able to realize savings, that we could use some of those savings to put into early childhood development and child care, as well as giving taxpayers a break and maybe giving some back. So I think everyone can win, but we're going to have to be willing to think outside the box and how we do this, because I want to grow the economy. I want to bring more families to Vermont, and I want to provide a cost of living that they can afford. And part of that is child care. Part of it is in housing as well, and providing affordable housing for the working class, which I think we've been missing over a number of years. And I think we can, that's an area that I believe that we can find common ground amongst us.
Let's turn to Charlotte, who's calling from Grand Isle. Hi, Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Governor-elect Scott. My comment and question is about Act 46. You indicated, I read in the news or heard on the news, I don't remember which, just before the election, that perhaps we could make this a voluntary program. I want to back up and say that there were two reasons for passing Act 46, as I understood it. And one was to achieve educational equity across the state, and the other was to be able to cut back the costs of education because of consolidation, and therefore being able to eliminate some positions and still build upon and increase our educational equity. The towns that have already voted to do Act 46 have accepted those needs and those positives. The ones that haven't have just not been able to see the advantages that would be achieved by consolidation, or haven't yet been able to. And that was with incentives in place for doing it.
And Charlotte, so what is your question?
The question is, how is it that you propose to make this program voluntary and have the savings and the educational equity that it was designed for? And I'm going to hang up and take the answer online on the radio. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Charlotte, for the question. And I understand. I think I understand where you're what you're asking. I made many comments throughout the campaign about what I believe. Act 46 wasn't perfect. I think it was a step taken by the legislature in reaction to the cries of relief for property tax relief amongst Vermonters for a number of years. And while not perfect, it was a step in the right direction, at least to start the dialogue. I believe there needs to be some changes within Act 46. I believe that we should adhere to and encourage school choice. I believe our independent schools should be protected. I also believe there should be more flexibility within the law because one size does not fit all. But I don't believe we should be repealing it because it would be unfair to those communities that have already gone through the difficult conversation about how we consolidate and what we do to try and get a grip on this this issue. And it's about, for me, it's about a lot of it's about costs, but it's also about quality of education. And if we can have a 21st century education, when we can have more interactive learning, we can share resources. I think that the children will have a better opportunity to learn, and I think that that's some of the premise of the law as well. So I'm just looking for more flexibility to acknowledge that some schools, regardless of size, still provide a great education, and they do so at a cost that's low enough for us to afford. But we shouldn't force them to consolidate when they don't need to. And that's the part, the flexibility that I was talking about. Maybe I wasn't talking about voluntary, an initiative to be voluntary, but more about flexibility within the current law.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor-elect Phil Scott. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to talk about health care and some other issues. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor-elect Phil Scott. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question or a comment. During the campaign, you talked about Vermont Health Connect and how you'd like to do away with the state exchange and join the federal model. Well, now we have the prospect with the election of President-elect Trump and with Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate in Washington, that repealing the Affordable Care Act is one of their top priorities. But it may take some months before that can happen. So How do you determine Vermont's healthcare future in the meantime?
Yeah, this is very difficult in some respects because it seemed clear that we should do away with the exchange. We should move to a federal model. I'm not sure what's going to be become of the federal model at this point. But there are other initiatives, statewide run systems. It may still make sense for us to move forward in transitioning to something else. But we have the other question of the all-payer waiver and whether that's something that's beneficial for Vermont and whether that survives as well. So there are many, many unanswered questions that I think we're all looking forward to having some answers as we move forward with this. But I don't want to do anything to increase the costs on Vermont. We need to live within our means. So I think a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude is probably what we should do at this point. And I think we're all just trying to come to grips with what this means for Vermont.
Do you support repealing the Affordable Care Act?
You know, at this point in time, from my standpoint, I believe there's a lot of good initiatives within the law. And I wouldn't be one to ask for it to be repealed. I think that there needs to be, again, more flexibility. We need an exchange that works. We need to find ways to cut the cost of health care and provide insurance to those that need it at a price they can afford. And so I'm not advocating for repeal, but I am advocating for more flexibility so that we can have a system that works for Vermont.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Randy in Underhill. Hey, Randy, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi. Congratulations on your win. I'm one of those Democrats that voted for Hillary Clinton and voted for you as well. Primarily.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome. We need some balance in Montpelier and for the fiscal reasons. But my wife is going to crown me because of your stance on gun control. With all the opioid problems with people trading guns for drugs coming up from New York, they call I-91 the Iron Highway and so on. Can you clarify? I mean, I had to get a background check to volunteer at the United Way to drive people around. Can you clarify your position on background checks for all gun purchases for us?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the question. I'm not advocating for any changes in the gun laws that we have. And I said along the campaign trail that I believe the root of the problem is the violence. It's not the guns, it's the violence. And I think that we should address those issues. We have laws in place that we should adhere to, and we should make sure that we enforce them. But we're one of the safest states in the nation, and I don't believe that that's an area that we need to focus on for Vermont. And I think that there we should be focusing on economic growth, the affordability of Vermont. But it's just not an area that I'm interested in going to.
You know, the Democratic members of the legislature say they feel they got a mandate as well. They picked up a couple of seats in the state Senate and pretty much held their own, I believe, in the Vermont House. And so they feel like their priority issues are important as well. One would be this mandatory background check for all gun sales. Another would be paid family leave. A third would be raising the state minimum wage. Are you saying to them, you know, go ahead and try to pass those things, but if those bills reach my desk, I'm going to veto them?
We're going to do whatever we can to have a conversation about areas that we can agree to. I believe that there are areas of economic growth that they could agree to as well. I've made my entire political life reaching across the aisle. I've done that consistently and tried to find consensus and tried to provide leadership in different areas and accomplish our goals. And I'm going to continue in that respect. I'll listen to what anyone has to offer, and we'll have a respectful, civil debate on how we move forward. But there are certain areas that I've been very clear about. Some of that is in terms of growing the economy, not allowing the budget to grow faster than your wages and the economy. That's something that I'm going to adhere to. The carbon tax is not something I'm interested in. I think that just ratchets up the cost of living. So there's a couple of areas, and I don't believe that we need to address gun control. I believe that our laws are okay the way they are, and I'd like to continue in that respect.
Sounds like when it comes to paid family leave and raising the state minimum wage, you're willing to have a conversation about that?
We can have a conversation about it, but I would like to remind them that every time we mandate something on a small business, that in itself raises the cost of living throughout. They don't absorb these changes. It has to be passed on to the consumer. So we're all paying for these initiatives. They just don't realize it sometimes. And it makes us uncompetitive with our neighbors, more uncompetitive. And I'm looking for ways that we can have a cost of living. We can have a Vermont that's affordable to all. And I think that we have to be careful as we move forward. The paid family leave initiative, we just pass something to help in that regard. And if they came up with something that was voluntary in nature, then, you know, we'd take a look at it. But if it's going to force another mandate and increase the cost of living on Vermonters, I'm really not interested in that.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who's calling from Bristol. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, and thanks for having me, and congratulations on your win, sir. I really look forward to having you be in office and to see what comes of it. So today's, you know, Veterans Day, and I myself am a combat veteran serving two tours in Iraq and one tour in Haiti, and currently sit as chair of an organization that helps veterans transition into agriculture after their time in service. And veteran issues have not been widely spoken about over the campaign trail, both at the federal and state level. And I'm curious to know that if it's in your agenda at any level to discuss veterans' issues within our state to assist our veterans in the reintegration process and to help them not become a statistic and to find homes and work through difficulties that they might have from their time in service overseas.
Well, the simple answer is yes. I have a deep amount of respect and appreciation for anyone who's served. My dad was a World War II vet, a double amputee, and he died of his injuries when I was 11. So it's something that I have a deep amount of respect for. In fact, thank you very much for your service. I should have said that at the beginning of the program. This is Veterans Day, and we have an obligation to you, those who protected us and ran towards problems rather than away from them. And so I hold you in high regard, and I would say that you will see in my administration some areas where we follow through on trying to fulfill our responsibility to you. So I look forward to working with you, hearing from you, and working together in order to help you.
Let's turn to Ralph, who's calling from Enosburg. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and congratulations, Governor Scott.
Thank you.
I did not vote for you, I have to admit. But
that's okay.
I hear that you're a good guy, yeah. So, and I didn't think it would be too bad if you were in office. But I just want to remind you, in 1991, we had a great big budget deficit, and the Republican Governor Richard Snellen did not slash services to the poor, and I hope you do the same here regarding Vermont's most vulnerable.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call, and hopefully next time, if I seek re-election, got to get through this one first. That you'll be voting for me. I think we have an obligation. Public safety comes first in any government, I believe. And taking care of the most vulnerable is part of that responsibility as well, public safety. So my administration will do just that. We'll prioritize, make sure that we take care of those who can't help themselves, and we will be a resource to try and make fulfill our responsibility. But also, we're going to work on trying to grow this economy. We're going to do whatever we can to have more organic growth in the economy so that the revenues come in rather than forcing by taxation and fees, that we can have more economic activity in order to bring revenue in naturally.
Let's talk to Seth, who's calling from Colchester. Hey, Seth, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Phil Scott, congratulations. I'm looking forward to seeing your work. My question is, I was wondering how you feel about legalizing a certain substance that Colorado has and several other states did on Tuesday to help kind of distract people from the opiate crisis, maybe give them another alternative, and also to have an additional tax base for folks outside of the state, and finally have a tax in the state that I don't have to pay for.
Well, thank you, Seth. I appreciate the well wishes. I've been consistent on this issue as well. I'm not saying no, never. I'm saying no, not now. I still believe we have a lot to learn from Colorado and Washington in terms of impairment on our highways, in terms of the edible issue and the tax structure as well. And I remember when the governor of Colorado had said as recently as I think it was January or February that his advice to any state that was seeking to legalize was to wait a couple of years and let us work our way through it. We can't afford to make any mistakes on this. We don't have the resources to do so. It's a huge policy decision. And I want to reiterate, I haven't said never. I'm just saying not now. Let's learn a little bit more. And then we can move forward, and we can do so with our eyes wide open and make sure. And I'm a person that was in support of decriminalization of marijuana. I supported medical marijuana when I was in the Senate. And so I'm not saying never. I'm just saying, you know, let's tread lightly here.
So on Tuesday, as the caller mentioned, both Massachusetts and Maine legalized the recreational use of marijuana. Does that have any impact on how you would like to go forward with this issue?
Well, I think we need to look. I haven't looked at what exactly their referendum said and what the timeline is for that. Certainly that will have a bit of a ripple effect in Vermont. Because we border we share a border with at least Massachusetts, so we'll take a look at that again. Let's see what the timeline is. Let's see how they administer that, and maybe, you know, as I said, if they could be determining a method for impairment on our highways that would work for Vermont. And a tax structure. Let's let them make some mistakes and learn from them.
And we got an email from David in Essex who wanted to know, have you considered the idea of helping our government spend their energy on more pressing matters than the legalization of marijuana by letting supporters know that you'd veto the bill if they try to pass it this year?
Yeah, you know, I'm not looking to move forward on this initiative this year. I hope they hear me loud and clear that we need to make sure that we determine impairment on the highways, a tax structure, deal with the edible issue, and some of the other ripple effects of this. So I'm not in any hurry. I hope that they will move forward with some of the pro-growth initiatives that I'm going to be advocating for to try and do whatever we can to grow this economy, to seek a more affordable Vermont, and because this crisis of affordability is real for us, and this changing demographic, the population being stagnant, we have a lot of opportunity here, but we're going to have to market ourselves in a much different way, and I look forward to doing that. But this isn't an area that that I think that we should spend a lot of time this session. I think we should be spending in other you know, like on the budget and education and some of the other areas that we haven't solved yet.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor-elect Phil Scott. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor-elect Phil Scott. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We did get this email from Rebecca in Essex Junction, who writes, as you talk about the future state budget, how do you plan to support the Department for Children and Families to help that department carry out its statutory mandate to protect children and also keep its employees safe?
Yeah, well, again, children are one of our most precious resources, and we have an obligation to protect our state employees. So that will be a priority. We prioritize our state budget in order to protect the most vulnerable, provide public safety, and those are the key, I think, to forming and prioritizing any budget. And so we'll deal with that as we move forward. But I want to just remind people that I'm not cutting the budget. I'm saying let's limit the rate of growth of the budget to something that's more sustainable, that's something that's more realistic. So that's the message. You know, live within our means just like you do in your budgets.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Kyle from Burlington. Hey, Kyle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My question is about the bigger drug addiction issue within our state as a whole and how we're going to work to – I mean, I have family members that have had drug abuse issues, and one of the things I see as a struggle is getting into – not only getting into rehab facilities, especially if you don't have insurance that's going to pay for it, and also what you're going to do afterwards. Often these sober houses are right in the epicenter of where the drug abuse is happening, and so that's not really taking people out of the problem, not giving them a fair shot to get better. I'll take my question off or my answer off the air.
Yeah, you've identified an area that is significant in Vermont and across our nation for that in that respect. I have to acknowledge the good work that the Shumlin administration, Governor Shumlin has made his State of the State address about this issue that we're facing this crisis in Vermont, and he was right. And we're going to continue the good work that he's done thus far and try and to come up with more initiatives. I have a 10-point opiate plan that's on my website, philscott.org, and we'll transition to that and put that into action. I'm going to appoint a director of drug abuse or substance abuse, and he or she is going to report directly to me. And I think this is a crisis that affects our economy. It's affecting our families, and anyone that doesn't think that it's affected them is just not aware of it, because it's affected all of us in different ways. I've had family members as well. So this is a big deal to us, and it's something that won't be solved overnight. But I think you'll find on my 10-point plan that it's a way of addressing this and really moving forward with some of the good work that's already been done.
Do you think the state has the resources to make sure that people don't have to wait for months to get into treatment programs?
It's difficult. And I went to visit some of those treatment programs while I was on the campaign trail. And they had talked about the lack of help and some of the providers and counselors and so forth that they needed and the resources to do so. So again, we will be addressing this and realizing that it's a significant problem for us as a state and that it does affect the economy. So I think we have an obligation to move forward. So yes, it's a substantial lift, but it's something that we have to do.
I mean, you've been talking about budget priorities during this hour. Is this one of them?
It is, because, again, it affects our economy so greatly, and it's a matter of public safety as well.
Let's talk to Evan, who's calling from Waterbury. Hey, Evan, what's on your mind today?
Governor Scott, first off, congratulations. My question to you revolves around the outdoor industry and trying to bring more jobs to Vermont. Sue Minter had part of her campaign platform revolved around this. I know that places like Ogden, Utah have had a lot of luck with attracting the outdoor industry to that area through tax incentives. And I'm wondering if you had any plans to capitalize on Vermont's infrastructure in terms of mountain bike trails, hiking trails, ski resorts, that kind of thing, to bring more quality outdoor industry jobs like Burton Snowboards and Rome Snowboards, keeping those guys here as well as incentivizing new positions here in the state. And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yes, I'm an outdoor activist or enthusiast myself. I do a tremendous amount of cycling. I've typically, not this year, but the year before, I put on 4,500 miles on my bicycle all throughout Vermont. I mountain bike as well, and snowshoe and ski, cross-country ski. So I believe it's part of the solution. I think it's part of economic activity. This is a resource that we're known for, and it's part of our outdoors, part of our heritage, and something that we can capitalize on. So I believe you'll see that we'll do whatever we can to grow this economy. And I think this is a major portion of that, and I think that many can agree to this, that it's something that's needed. It's part of a marketing approach as well. And you never know who the next person that might be coming down that bike trail or on that ski slope. I think it was Watson that came from IBM that came to here to Vermont to ski, and then decided to bring a whole division of IBM to Vermont. And look where that has taken us, and the amount of jobs and the ripple effect that's had on our economy has been significant. So we'll never know who that is, but I'm confident that it could be that next mountain biker coming down one of the trails.
We got this email on the question of ethics. Vermont has seen a number of high-profile ethics problems in the past few years, to say nothing of the revolving door between business and the legislative and executive branches of state government. The state Senate failed to enact any ethic regulations last session. I'm wondering what instructions the future governor has given to his transition team on this matter. And you also said during the campaign that you were going to sell your interest in your company. Is that something that'll be happening in the next few months?
That'll be happening before I take office. That's something I made that campaign promise, and I will fulfill that. We talked about ethics and an ethics panel, and I believe that it's something that is needed. I don't agree that it needs to be a whole new level of bureaucracy that's going to cost millions of dollars to put in place. I think there's another model that will work, and I'm not looking to do anything to increase costs, but I think we need to give comfort to our citizens, restore that faith and trust that I think has been lost in our leadership. And that's something that I want to follow through on, that we need to restore that, and we need to make sure that they feel comfortable with their leaders. And an ethics panel, if that helps in that regard, I will move forward and hopefully help in the process. But I don't want to have it cost the state millions of dollars in order to implement. I think there's other areas that we can work together on, and maybe there's some other panels that we can combine in order to get what we want.
Are you telling people who might be part of your administration in January that if they do take a job with you, that they're going to have to wait for a period of time if and when they leave before they can get back into government work?
We'll definitely have something in that regard, much like I think Governor Douglas had that, and we'll address that issue. Right now, what we're trying to do is hire people. And for those who are out there that are interested in joining our administration, we do have a transition.vermont.gov website that's set up to, and I'd advocate for people of all walks of life. There's no litmus test here. You don't have to be a Republican to join our administration. We want talent. We want talented people that want to serve and share in the vision of a better, more prosperous Vermont, and can adhere to a budget and have objective, outside-the-box type of thinking and an approach. And you don't have to have people that have been in government before. Actually, I'm attracted to people that are diverse and look outside the box.
Do you anticipate there might be some people from the Shulman administration who would stay on?
I'm advocating for everyone that has an interest in serving to submit their resumes and applications to us, and there could be, but we'll take those under advisement. We'll take those at face value, and we'll consider all applicants.
Over the next few weeks, the administration of Governor-elect Phil Scott will be making important decisions, and we'll be following all of these developments. Governor-elect Phil Scott, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Monday on Vermont Edition, we'll discuss marijuana legalization votes in Massachusetts and Maine. They were two of the four states that approved legalization on Tuesday. We'll learn about the differences between the two approaches taken by these states and what it could mean for efforts in Vermont to legalize pot. Send your questions or comments to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.